Welcome back to this Sunday special edition of The Truth Frequency. My name is Chris Averard, and I'm joined by Mr. Max Egan, who's live in Australia. Max, can you hear me clearly?
I certainly can, Chris. It's nice to talk to you again, brother.
It's lovely to be with you, Max. I really appreciate all of your work. I've really enjoyed appearing on broadcasts with you in the past, and I asked Chris to, you know, have you as a guest because you're doing some really, really important work. And what I basically have done in the first hour is I've spoken a bit about chi energy and this universal life force energy, which my Chinese Qigong master has been teaching me about for the last few years. And I've also talked about the left-hand path and the right-hand path, the two paths, if you like, of white magic and black magic. And it seems to me that the indigenous people, like the Aborigines of Australia, the Maoris of New Zealand, and the sovereign nations, the Cherokee Nation, the Sioux, the Blackfoot, the Hopi, the Arapaho, all of these hundreds of original sovereign inhabitants of the land which we now call the United States of America. It seems to me, as I'm reading, you know, the quotations from Geronimo and some of the great Indian leaders, that they were very, very much in touch with this universal life force, with this earth energy, if you like, and with the soul and with the spirit. And what I see when I look through history is I see these people who are really chasing the profit motive going into these lands. I mean, we have to say that they are primarily the European elite from the 17th and 18th centuries and a bit before then as well. And what they've done with the Maoris and the Aborigines and the American Indians and also the indigenous populations of Central America in El Salvador, San Salvador, Mexico, is they've not only destroyed those people, but it's almost like a spiritual genocide as well as a physical genocide. And I asked Chris to arrange for you to be a guest, Max, because I just wanted to give you the opportunity to tell us from your point of view, what exactly is the state of play right now with the Maoris in New Zealand and also the Aborigines in Australia?
Well, what's been done to these people really is an incredible effort has been gone to disconnect them from the earth. And this is what the Europeans have done throughout when they've taken over all the indigenous races, because as you say, the indigenous races still had this connection. And a lot of this has been done through religion. They go and impose this in completely false system on people, and it removes them from their connection to the planet, because we are so connected to this planet. And if you try to tell people this, they say, oh, you're pantheism and all this sort of stuff, you know. I mean, they don't understand that without the earth, we're just floating through space. We can't exist. We are absolutely connected to this earth so much. The earth is our mother in every way, shape or form, because it is what gives us life. Without this earth, we could not exist. We are literally one with this earth, the same as every other animal on this earth and every other creature that exists on this earth. And you notice that everything in nature actually gets along quite well with nature. And then you have humankind, and we kind of don't. But we did. A lot of the indigenous races actually did. They might do some things which were destructive now and then, such as the Australian Aboriginal would light bushfires and burn the country off now and then. But you'd find that there's plants in Australia that only flourish when they're burnt off. That we've got trees here that the seeds only become fertile in fire. They have to be burnt to become fertile. So they just understood the country. You know, they understood the connection to the planet. And you'll find most of these indigenous races lived like this. And then we come along and we've kind of thrown everything off balance. And that's what it's all about. That's another reason why English has been imposed upon all the people around the world. They want to make it the most pervasive language, because it's a language which disconnects you from reality. It's a language which it's very difficult to explain higher senses to people in English. I often use the word Dharma as an explanation. I could write a book on Dharma, to try to explain to someone what it meant. But if I'm speaking Hindi, I just have to say Dharma, and they know exactly what I mean. So this has been done, and it's been done very deliberately and very methodically.
Well, it's extremely sad. I mean, during the making of my Spirit World documentaries, you know, I was collecting all of this information about what the Aborigines were really doing before the European settlers arrived. And I came across these incredible photographs, not only in Australia, but also in New Zealand. And there were megalithic stone structures in the center of Australia. Mm. And I spoke to a chap called Bruce Caffey. And I don't know whether you're familiar with Bruce Caffey's research, but he's really one of these people who's interested in the grid energy lines that go across the planet, different levels around the planet. I'm pretty sure he's Australian. He might be New Zealand, but I'm pretty sure he's Australian. And Bruce actually did a slide presentation, which I saw on video. And one of the saddest and most terrible things I saw during the research for Spirit World are these old photographs of a megalithic stone structure somewhere in the center of Australia. And it was this site that the British chose to use as a test site for blowing up nuclear weapons. Now, were you aware of that, Max?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Bruce Caffey's work. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff here in Australia. There's pyramids at Gympie. The Army used one of them for target practice at Gympie in Queensland.
Really?
Yeah, there were two of them. There's two of them in a place called Tin Can Bay, just near Gympie in Queensland. And one of them had corridors underneath it, and they found stone statues all around it. The stone statues were sent down to Melbourne to be examined, and of course they lost them. And then the man who wanted to excavate under his pyramid, because it actually had passages underneath it, he started announcing that he was going to excavate it. He mysteriously died of a heart attack, and the army commandeered his land. They got in some bulldozer drivers. The bulldozer drivers covered up the pyramid, and then the army used it for target practice. I have that on good authority from one of the bulldozer drivers, actually. And there's another man on the property next door who has a pyramid on his property, and it's covered up. It just looks like a hill, but you can pull a bit of the dirt away and you can find flagstones beneath it. But he's not quite, he's not too keen on excavating it or telling too many people about it just because of what happened to his next door neighbor.
Now, are these earthworks the actual work of the Aborigine people? I would imagine they are. Or is it traced back to, you know, people before them?
Well, it actually, there was an Egyptian connection to Australia. There's Egyptian hieroglyphs that can be found in the Blue Mountains off the back of Sydney. And something that you don't often hear as well is that a common language that the Aboriginals had with the British was Egyptian. And another thing is that gold has its own fingerprint, its own signature. Any piece of gold that you find, you can have it analyzed, and they will tell you which mine it came from, because all gold has a fingerprint. And you'll find that the gold that Tutankhamun's sarcophagus is made from actually comes from the Gympie goldfields. And it's speculated that the goldfields in Gympie are the location of King Solomon's mines. Because if you look at how long it would have taken for a voyage to come from where King Solomon apparently lived, around Jordan, to come to somewhere, then you'd have to stay there, mine, you'd have to grow a crop so you could sail the ship back again, because that's the way they used to do it. You could never just do a trip there and back. You always had to stay long enough to obtain food for the return journey back in the old sailing days. So if you put all that into account, it makes sense that the time of sailing it would have taken to sail from Jordan to Queensland and then grow a crop and sail back again is a very, very good indication that Gympie is the location of King Solomon's mines. And that would very much explain why the gold in Tutankhamun's tomb comes from the Gympie gold mine. It has an Australian signature to it. And the Aboriginals often talk about people that came from Egypt and built these things. So, yeah, very interesting.
Well, that is absolutely mind-blowing information. I've never heard of Egyptian links to Australia, but I've actually put into my book, Stone Age Psychedelia, that there was a Smithsonian Institute expedition that went to the Grand Canyon in Arizona, and they also found artifacts that seemed to be partly Egyptian, or they seem to be partly maybe from India. And it shows that the ancient people were able to actually travel the planet. And there was a, I think he was a Norwegian anthropologist. His name is Thor Heyerdahl.
Yeah.
And he did an expedition on a ship which he made himself called the Kon-Tiki. And he did two or three of these expeditions. And what I find really interesting, I've just read Frank Walter's book. It's called The Book of the Hopi. Is that the reed, which is what Thor Heyerdahl used to actually make these boats, that he sailed thousands of miles on these boats, which he made from bulrushes.
Mm.
Ordinary reeds. And what I've found really fascinating about the Hopi is that the reed is a sacred plant to them. But where they live on the mesas in Arizona, there are no reeds. So it's almost as if it's a throwback to the time when they were migrating, and the Hopi creation myths actually, you know, clearly explain that they, you know, covered all four corners of this earth.
Oh, yeah, well, they did. See, nothing they've told us about history is true, Chris. Absolutely none of it is true. Things are so different to what they said. There's actually carvings here in Australia on rock faces of high-prowed boats that were built by Aboriginals. And these are scratched into rocks, and these have a high prow at the front. These are ocean-going vessels. And you'll find that there have been Australian Aboriginal skulls found in South America. They've been found in Europe. They've been found all over the place. And you'll find that the Australian Aboriginal also has the most diversity of genomes in the entire world. Mm-hmm. They'll tell us that life came out of Africa. There's about six or seven different genome types in the African Negro. But there's over, there's 32 in the Australian Aboriginal. And there were 70 nations here. And they never warred with each other. Sometimes they'd have territorial disputes. But if you look at history around the world, history changes all the time because it's written by the winners. There's always these battles. Yeah. European history and Western history is basically a series of roaming armies going around taking over places and rewriting history in that place. It's very, very difficult to find out what happened in history in Europe. But in Australia, there were 70 nations that never warred with each other. They sent out explorers around the world because they had these high-plowed vessels, and you find skulls all around the world. And all of their stories and all of their lore and all of their history was all handed down through oral tradition. And people might say, well, okay, things change when it's oral tradition because you can tell a story. You know, the old thing where you start a story, it goes around the circle, and by the time it gets to the end, it's a completely different story. Well, with the Australian Aboriginal, I've actually seen elders actually sit down and argue for 3 hours over the pronunciation of one word. And then they all had to agree that that's how it was pronounced and that's how what it meant. So there is no question that these stories changed. These people were meticulous in their handing down of law. So the original history that is told by the Australian Aboriginals really is the most credible because it's handed down by people who will argue for 3 hours over the pronunciation of a word, not only its meaning. And these are from tribes that never ever warred with each other. So they all have the same history and they all have the same law.
Mm. Now coming back to this subject of chi energy, and being in tune with the forces of nature and living within nature, which is very much what the Aborigine people do. Have you seen any evidence of heroin or alcohol or other kinds of drugs being introduced artificially into the present day population of the Aboriginal people in order to try and disconnect them from the earth energy, from the chi energy of the universe?
Look, everything that's done to the Aboriginal people is done to disconnect them. Everything that this government pertains to do to help them is to disconnect them. They are truly a wonderful, wonderful people, the Australian Aboriginal. I have some wonderful Aboriginal friends. I've actually recently been adopted into a tribe in Western Australia, the Noongar people. They are now my people. And that was a great honour for me. And everything that's done to the Aboriginal people is done to disconnect them. Alcohol affects them very, very badly because they have a different genetic makeup to Caucasians or to Negroes. They're actually a completely unique species, the Australian Aboriginal. You've got Caucasian, you've got Negroid, you've got Oriental, you've got Mongoloid, and you've got Australis. So they're a completely separate species to everybody else, and it affects them very, very deeply. But they're very, very connected to the planet. All of their language evolves words that emulate nature. When they're talking about bees, they use buzzing words. The name of a kangaroo, for example, is the sound of the kangaroo jumping on the ground. It's like a bumana, 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 sort of I can't remember the actual word, but it's something like that. They use this energy. They believe that it all comes in triads, in triangles. You've got to have the song, you've got to have the dance, and you've got to have the art. So they create art on the ground. They'll get clumps of grass, and they'll mix it with ochre, and they'll create an Aboriginal painting on the ground, and then they'll sing in a type of language, and they'll dance in a type of language, and they'll actually have nature react to this dance, and they can summon bees and all sorts of things by dancing and doing the right artwork. So that's the way they do it, and it's all to do with this chi energy, because everything's made of this energy. It's all the same stuff, and it's just how to harness it.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any parallels that go on amongst Aboriginal people in Australia or even in New Zealand that kind of mimics or is closely related to the so-called rain dances, which we see with the Indian nations in the USA? Are they able to call rain?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like I said, they can call nature, they can change nature, they can summon animals, they can summon rain. They're amazing, absolutely amazing people. But once they get subjected to this culture, it's completely alien to them. It's absolutely alien. These are people who ran around this country naked for 40,000 years at least, and there's actually records that can put them back at 400,000 years. So yes, they've been doing this for a very, very long time. I think man has been here a lot longer than they tell us. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if humanity has been on this planet for literally millions of years. Nothing they've told us about history is true, Chris, and I'm sure you know this. None of it is true. And a lot of, they've got people so distracted with all this other stuff that people just won't step back and look at the real picture.
Well, in the research I did for my book, I came across amazingly that there were a kind of set of commandments that were common to all of the North American Indian tribal nations. And they differed a little bit from, you know, the Cherokee to the Arapaho to all the different tribes, but they were all basically the same teachings. And I just want to read a couple of them. The first of these, if you want, I suppose it's wise to call them commandments. The first one says, treat the earth and all that dwell thereon with respect. Now, you see that in the teachings of Tibetan Buddhism, where the first teaching is compassion for all living creatures. So that seems to be like a kind of universal thing that we see with these First Nation people. And then the second one is show great respect for your fellow humans or your fellow beings. And another one says, work together for the benefit of all mankind and all of the earth.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, that really sums up, you know, people who are really connected.
Mm.
And what I want to ask you about is, you mentioned in a broadcast which we did a little while ago, the so-called song lines. Now, am I right in saying, Max, that the song lines of the Aborigines are related, or they are very similar to the ley lines, which we see, which is like a kind of energy grid that connects megalithic circles in Europe? Is a song line the same as a ley line?
Well, it's the song lines that can affect the ley lines. The song lines basically control the ley lines, from my understanding that I'm getting from original people that I'm speaking to here. Where the race started was around about here on the east coast of Australia. This is where the Aboriginal race started, and it would appear that the Aboriginal race is the original race. The Australian Aboriginal race is the original race of this planet. and it all came from there. And when they, as I've said, they've got this unique connection with nature, and they sing things into reality. There was a ceremony where they did, and they called bees. A man spun, and he spun, held his arms tight, and span fast, and then he put his arms wide, and he span slowly, and he did this dance, and he sung this song of the bees for 3 days, because everything goes in threes. They created the artwork on the ground, he did the dance, and he sang the song. And when he finished, a swarm of bees arrived. They swarmed around a little girl, and they completely covered her. They didn't sting her or anything, they just covered her. And then they started mimicking his dance, spinning very fast and then widening out and spinning very slow. And they kept doing this, and they danced off down the river. And this was done in front of hundreds and hundreds of people. So this is one of their ceremonies. So when they had this connection to reality, way back at the birth of their race, they sang through existence. They sang their way across the country. And these...
I don't want to cut you off there, Max, but we're coming up for a break. And after the break, I'd really like to continue this conversation. You're
My
listening
pleasure.
To The Truth and Seat on Sundays with Chris Everard, and it's produced by Mr. Chris Geo. You're listening to The Truth Frequency. Welcome back to this special Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. And I want all of the patriots to listen up. I'm here with a special guest from Australia, Mr. Max Egan. And what I want to say to the patriot movement is this. There is no such nation as the United States of America. And I want to say to all of the Australians and the New Zealanders who are tuning in from all around the world, there is no such nation as Australia. There's no such nation as New Zealand. What we've got is we've got a hodgepodge of land that's been stolen from proud, wonderful, ancient people who migrated and occupied large areas of land right around the world. Right around the world. Okay? And that is the truth of it. So all these patriots that stand there with the flag, especially in the USA, you've got to remember that the USA is a country which has been born out of genocide. And this genocide has been inflicted by evil, super-rich people who we call the Illuminati. Many of these super-wealthy families are members of a global network of secret societies, and they worship demonic forces. Now, you don't just judge someone by their words, you judge them by their deeds. And there's a lot of shows on the Oracle Broadcasting Network at the moment which are promoting Freemasonry. They're saying it's a brotherhood. It's a fraternity. There's nothing wrong with that. On the surface of that, there is nothing wrong with it. It's all very well for people to get together. But look at the world around you. We've got Australia that's been stolen from ancient people. New Zealand has been stolen from the Maoris. The USA has been stolen from the Cherokee, Arapaho, Hopi, Blackfoot, and all the other great nations. It's been stolen by evil people. Many of these people worship Satan or call themselves Luciferians. And that's what I want to discuss in this next section of the show, because the actions of these people have brought us to a world, today's world, where 30,000 children a day, every 24 hours, are dying of preventable diseases. They're dying, they're not dying of the plague, they're not dying of anything really serious. They're dying of very, very simple diseases. Sometimes it's the common cold. 30,000 children every 24 hours. And Freemasonry, the Ordo Templi Orientis, and all of these secret societies have seeded people into really powerful positions within the Pentagon, within the White House, within Whitehall. And so what I want to do in this series of broadcasts, these special broadcasts on Sundays, is really get real and get to the root of it. So what I want to ask you, Max, is, you know, a lot of these people that I speak to as I'm making my documentaries about the Illuminati, they always draw a line between Satanism and Luciferianism. And what I want to ask you, Max, is, in your opinion, who is Satan and who is Lucifer?
Okay, well, this is a really, really deep rabbit hole to go down. Like, there's been an awful lot of effort gone to keep people distracted from what's going on. From my meditations and things that I've discovered in my research, my understanding is that the universe is energetic. Everything is energy. Everything is made up of photon light and phonon sound. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. The energy has two different polarities, which is basically negative and positive, contraction, expansion, love and fear, whatever you want to call it. Within the human experience, those two polarities are represented as love and fear. Okay, so when you have an earth and everybody's so connected to it, the way the indigenous races were, if you want to disconnect the people from that, you have to present them with a completely false version of reality. Okay, so what's happened, and the reason a lot of these indigenous cultures can do what they do is because they have active pineal glands and their DNA is more active and all this sort of stuff. What's been done to us is we've been locked down from all of that, and we find it very, very difficult to understand or look at the universe energetically because we are always looking for the big, evil, dark force that is in charge, because that's what we're told is in charge. We're told that it's this big battle that's going on between God and Satan. I see God as source, as the energy source itself, the energy of creation. I see Satan as the dark energy. Now, anybody that's had ayahuasca or DMT experiences, which is what happens when your pineal gland gets active, sees that you can create, in that state, when you are communicating with reality with those higher senses, you can create either one of those states, depending on whether you are in love or fear. Okay? So it all comes down to that. The fearful side is Satan. The good side is Source. And Lucifer actually is Venus. Lucifer is related to Venus. And all of the stuff that we're subject to, the music, the sigils everywhere, it's all sigils. All of the music is audio sigils. The symbolism everywhere, these are all sigils that set up harmonic vibrations. This is what keeps us locked into this, and these are all based on something to do with the orbital cycles of Venus. It's got something to do with the cosmic energy, the solar energy, the energy that binds this solar system together. This is basically what Luciferianism is. It's knowing how to understand this energy and use it in such a way that it locks our minds into this narrow bandwidth of reality. And people never discover this because they're always off looking for Satan and God. It's a complete distraction. But the people, the indigenous people of the planet, they look at a whole Satan, Lucifer, God thing, and they think, you guys are all nuts. There's Father Sun, there's Mother Earth, and there's the energy that binds it all together. And that's how they work. And they look at the whole Western culture, and they just think, you guys are all crazy. None of this is real. And they put all of these things, the backmasking, because a lot of people like getting into this weird stuff. You get a lot of kids and they go, oh, Satanism, this is scary, spooky stuff. I'm going to put on black robes and start doing this stuff. And then you'll get people looking at Crowley's work and stuff and weaving all of this into their stuff. And it all just perpetuates these sigils. That's all it does. It just keeps people locked into the matrix. It keeps people distracted from looking at the universe energetically. And it prevents them from ever looking at what the answer is, which is to return to the old ways. We can still have our technology and all of our stuff, but we need these higher understandings that the ancient races had. This is just how it seems to work.
Is the influence of Venus, or Lucifer, as you say, that is the main reason why this narrow perception is being promoted, is that right?
Well, it's very difficult to get to the bottom of it, but it's a way of manipulating the energy of the universe and manipulating the energy that this solar system generates. And it's got something to do with the orbital cycles of Venus, because that's what they've based it all on. Even if you look at the pentagram with the inner circle and the outer circle and the pentagram in the middle, exactly mimics the orbits of Earth and Venus if put together in the two orbital paths. That's why there's two rings outside it, and it traces the alignments of Venus. It always does. And everything that these people are doing, that they're promoting Satanism and all of this fear energy that they're promoting, it just keeps us all locked into this fear reality. Because it's an energetic universe. We're contributing to it all the time. And it doesn't matter what sort of fear you're in. If you've got to get into Satanism and do it that way and torture people, or you rape people or hurt people or keep people stressed out financially, whatever it is, they don't care, as long as you're generating this fear energy. Because this fear energy is what perpetuates it and what keeps it going. But it's all these sigils as well. And even people that are into sacred geometry and all these different shapes and peace signs and all these things, these are all sigils. All you're doing is confirming the matrix. You're just confirming this 3D bandwidth, this tiny bandwidth of reality that you're experiencing. And, you know, a lot of why they've gone out and wiped out all these ancient cultures is to keep people away from this knowledge of how absolutely easy it is to connect with each other and to connect with the earth. If you don't bombard yourself with all of this crap that they subject us to. And they've set up all of this stuff to keep people looking down rabbit holes and never stepping back and actually looking at the thing holistically and understanding how reality itself actually works. Forget all the religious stuff. Forget all the sneaky stuff and the things they're trying to distract you with, and everyone's waiting for the boogeyman to be behind every rock, when really the answer is right there in front of them. It's so simple that they can't see it.
Okay, we're coming up for a break. From what you've said, it seems to me that Luciferians and Luciferianism is evil. But we'll pick it up after the break.
Luciferianism is manipulating the very chi of the universe, the energy of the universe itself, for negative means, to create this reality. You know what I'm saying?
Strive.
Yeah. And people won't ever look at it energetically because they're too busy looking for Satan, you know?
Yeah.
And it's very clever. Very clever the way they've done it. And the church is right behind it. The church knows all of this stuff. I mean, even when you look at the trust law we were getting into before, or the whole stuff, the Crown Corporation, this all goes back to the church. It all goes back to the Vatican. Goes back to the Jesuits, to the Khazarians, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's incredibly clever people we're dealing with, and they've got everyone looking down rabbit holes, expecting the boogeyman around every corner or waiting to ascend. No one's ever looking at what's going on and dealing with it.
I agree with that, Max, definitely, because the Catholic Church is one of the most evil organizations, so I think the evil just lies with every structured religion or belief system.
Well, this whole problem that we're facing now with the trust law and this whole enslavement of our populations to our governments, which is not the way it's supposed to be, this was all started by the Vatican. This was all started by the trust that was created by Pope Boniface in the 1300s, you know. And then the three trusts that came after that, which set up the crown and then took control of private property and then decided they would take control of the soul as well. And we just never claimed it back. So it all goes back to them. All the international banking cartels, this all goes back to the Vatican, the whole lot. And these are the Khazarians, basically. And they set the Jews up to blame the Jews. It all looks like the Jews, which is a good indication that it's not the freaking Jews, because it's too obvious, you know what I mean? And no one's looking at the roots of all these organizations, or I mean, people like Chris are, but I mean, there's very few people that are going back.
I'm sorry, Max, we're coming back in 10 seconds.
All right.
Okay.
Or actually 30.
Welcome back to this special Sunday edition of The Truth Frequency. And I'm here with Max Egan. My name is Chris Everard, and we're in the last section of this 2-hour special broadcast. And what I want to say is that the establishment of Australia, the establishment of New Zealand, the establishment of the USA is the establishment of a quasi-European superstate of slave traders. That's who the founding fathers of most of these new modern nations that have sprung up during the last 200 years really are and really were. They were slave traders. Now, before the break, Max, we were discussing Luciferianism, and you explained it that Luciferianism is really the interplay of the polarities between love and fear, good and bad. And it seems to me then that Luciferians who play the game, who've created their modern world of PlayStations and 30,000 children a day dying of preventable diseases, Luciferians, it seems to me, are caught in some kind of web, and they're manipulating the negative polarity for their own ends. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's what Luciferianism is. You see, it's a lot easier to generate fear in people than it is to generate love in people. And when people generate this fear in others, it's kind of an ecstasy for them. They get into a state of ecstasy from inflicting this pain and this extracting this energy from others. It's very, very dark. But that's basically what it is. And the acts of Luciferianism and all the sigils and stuff that we see everywhere, whether they're audio sigils or visual sigils, and all these things set up vibrational energies. I mean, you know this, but they do. So all of these things, the manipulation of all of these things is done to us in order to generate this reality that we're in. And we're given distractions such as looking for the boogeyman, waiting to ascend, and all of these things to prevent us from ever really looking within ourselves and stepping back and looking and seeing how this works. Because all we have to do really to get rid of the whole thing and knock it all on its head is to start loving each other. That's really it. You know, start seeing each other as equals, start seeing each person in this reality as valid. So many people see their own perspective as valid, but they don't see other people's perspectives as valid. You know, I know what's going on, but you don't. You know, well, absolutely you do. Your perspective is just as valid as mine, because without it, we can't have creation. You've got to have all of these different perspectives. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And why would you invalidate anybody else's perspective and then expect yours to be seen as valid? You know, because, you know, there's no one better than anybody else. There's no one different to anybody else, really, except by their perspective. And we've forgotten all of that. And we're not looking at things energetically. We're always looking for the boogeyman or always looking to be saved by somebody else. But we've never done the inner work in ourselves and face the fear within ourselves that prevents us from seeing others as different.
Yeah, I mean, I take things on a kind of day-to-day, nuts-and-bolts, daily management basis. And one of the things which I've realized is that these nations of great ancient people, like the Aborigines and the Maoris and like the Hopi and the Navajo, what I would say to everyone is do not get caught up in this Patriot radio, Patriot TV, wave the flag paradigm. Most of these nations have only been around for 200 odd years. The USA, Australia, New Zealand. They've stamped out these really great people, and they're using heroin, and they're using alcohol, and they're using prescription drugs to disconnect these people, which is what we said before the break. Now, next Sunday, what I'm going to do is I'm going to expose and I'm going to name the names of Vatican cardinals, monsignors, and Vatican priests who are studying black magic texts. And these people are perverts. They're religious perverts. They're sexual perverts. So what I want to say is that the Vatican have really, like we were having a quick discussion during the break, the Vatican have, if you like, provided the religious framework that has caused a great number of people, good, really good, well-meaning families, to miss the point. And they've gone over to Australia, they've gone over to New Zealand, they've gone over to the USA, they've populated these lands, which are not theirs. And what I want to say to the Patriot movement is that your salvation is in your own backyard. If you're not happy with your government, move. You have to move onto these sovereign territories, because there's more than 100 sovereign nations within the USA. And that's not me saying that. The Supreme Court have said that. And just as a last point, because we haven't got long to go, Max, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. Is there such a thing as a Australian government recognition of the Aboriginal people? Do the Aboriginal people have sovereign territory, such as some of the American tribal nations have.
Well, they do, and actually, the Australian Aboriginal owned the entire country. There was never any battle here. There was never any treaty signed. There was never any invasion. There's no document that can be tabled that show that the British government or the Crown Corporation has any title to Australia at all. That's the thing. It's been a bee in their bonnet for ages. They've been trying to do things recently. Like, we went up to a meeting on the Gold Coast 2 weeks ago with Aboriginal elders. I went up there as an observer, and we took an Australian legal spokesman with us for the Aboriginal people, a man called Mark McMurtry. And Mark ran rings around the Crown lawyer that they had there, which was quite hilarious to see. But what they were doing was they were attempting to make changes to the Australian Constitution in order to recognise Aboriginal people within the Constitution, to lift them up, to give them the same rights as everybody else in Australia, and which would basically have put them under British rule. And they don't want any part of it. They're saying, no, we're sovereign. We're under our own rule. We don't want to be part of your Constitution. It's just a piece of paper. Just because you guys came to this country and you arrived on a beach and you had these triangular hats on and you got a stick with a rag hanging off it and you stuck it on a hill and claimed the land for England, doesn't mean that you own it. There are already 70 nations here and we still own it. You just came and never left. And so that's, wow, that's the place that the Aboriginals are in. So if you treaty with the Australian original people, you can stand under original law, because even in, under British law in this country, even under the original documents brought here by Governor Phillip, it said that, the law of the original people still holds sway for the tribes of the original people. But Well, that's what I've done. I've treated with a race or with a people, or they actually invited me in. Numbal people. And so, if you do that, it actually puts you above British law. But I've been looking down the whole trust law thing, and you're absolutely right that this does go back to the Vatican. The three city states that run the world, even the Crown Corporation in London, you can trace that back to the Vatican. There's an office within the Crown Corporation, which is a separate entity within that corporation, and that is related back to the Vatican. The whole thing goes back to the Vatican, and that's how the world's being run, through the three city states.
Well, that's exactly what I'm going to be concentrating on next Sunday's show, which kicks off at 4 p.m. Californian time, 1 a.m. London, 2 a.m. Paris. Max, I hope to have you on as a guest again. The 2 hours go by so fast. And thank you very, very much to give us your time today and your wisdom. And I wish you and all of the Australian people well. And I hope that you have full independence. And I hope that the Aboriginal people join together with all the well-meaning people in Australia and form a real Australia and have respect for the Aboriginal people. Well, so I'd just like to, you know, I've got to wrap it up because we have a caller, Mike, in Maryland. I'm so sorry, Mike, for keeping you hanging on this long. We've got a break coming up. And if you could call back on the next show, I'm very, very sorry, but we've run out of time to take your call. I had every intention of taking your call, but the commercial Nazis are after us again. And I'd like to thank everybody who sent me donations to keep my show going. I really do appreciate it. What I'll do is, if you send me a 99-cent donation, I'll send you 10 hours of MP3s. And that should keep you all busy until next week. And I'll also send you a free ebook. And you can donate at the Enigma Channel website, which is enigmatv.com. And every single person who sent me a donation is an absolute angel. And I'd like to thank Cherie. And I'd like to thank Chris Geo as well. And I'd like to thank Doug and Lee, Oracle Broadcasting, because they are absolute heroes. And tune in for a special broadcast next Sunday.
Great show, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Max.
My pleasure, Chris. Yeah, I'll be happy to come on again anytime. Something else I wanted to say that we didn't quite get on air, but was that, well, what they were doing with the song lines when they started singing across from here, this was really connecting with the energy lines, and they sang they sang creation basically into existence, and they sang nature in. This is how they started to control it and all this sort of stuff. And what the British did when they came here, see, they knew all this. The Vatican knows this stuff. Right? They know about the song lines. They know about the ancient histories. Because when the British came here, they got Aboriginal boys and Aboriginal girls, and they dressed them up in Christian robes and Christian outfits, and they made them walk the song lines singing Christian hymns. So they sang that lore into this country. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, that is so, yeah, I do know exactly what you mean. That is so incredibly evil.
Oh, you think?
You know,
it shows the deviousness of these people.
Yeah.
They absolutely know how it works. They know that it's an energetic universe. They know it's all about light and sound vibration. It's all about love and fear. When they do these rituals, these black magic rituals, these are simply to create these huge energy vortexes, and it's all related. This is what Luciferianism is, but everyone's going, oh no, this is black magic, this is Satan and the devil, and it's the big fight between God and this evil entity. They're not realizing what's actually going on. You know what I'm saying? This is all a distraction to prevent them from looking at the world energetically. They can simply put love in their hearts. The Australian Aboriginal are incredibly loving people. Even when the British came here, they get lost in the forest. The Aboriginals would bring them back. They'd give them water. They'd bring them back to their campsite and pat them on the back. And they never hurt anybody. They never hurt anybody. And now they simply do not understand this culture at all, which is why they are so easily manipulated by it.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, Max. I'm only doing these broadcasts to really get this kind of information out because nobody else is covering these subjects.
No, well, they're not.
In this kind of depth.
Well, they're not. And this is why I've been working so deeply with the Aboriginal elders around here now. Because they're bringing this information out. And even, excuse me, I've said on my shows and I've said on my films that reality follows the Fibonacci sequence. Everything in reality follows Fibonacci sequence and sacred geometry. Everything. You know, like even plants and all the cells in your body. It's all fire ratio and Fibonacci sequence. So why not consciousness itself? Why wouldn't reality itself in its evolution follow Fibonacci sequence? And in Fibonacci sequence, you combine the present with the past to create the future. And this is why we need to learn the old ways. Through this period that we're in, this enlightenment of consciousness that we're going on, we cannot leave that way. We cannot lose that old consciousness. We have to apply it to this consciousness. And the indigenous people all around the planet are ready to accept us into their lives and accept us and love us for who we are because they can see that our society is breaking down. It's in its stages of decay. It's about to collapse. Yeah. You know, and they're already welcome us back in. But there's so much animosity from modern people towards these indigenous people because they've been trained to be that way. It's so sad to see, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, one of the other reasons why I'm doing these broadcasts is because I really do want a kind of velvet loving revolution. And I think that the indigenous people in our own backyards are the key.
Oh, they are.
They really are. They are the key because if you have a designated indigenous nation, which is, you know, respected by one of these governments, you know, there's no reason why you can't register your business and move your family onto one of these areas and claim sovereignty.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what we're doing with the trust law, that even if you are part of their system, there's a way out of it. There's a way through it. And it's in trust law. The remedy is in trust law. You've just got to start understanding how trust law works. There's been some incredible stuff being brought to the table about that in the last few weeks. And that's why I'm doing these trust law meetings. I'm actually going out to do one tonight and might end up even videoing one and putting it online so people end up getting to see me, which will be a bit of a thrill for them. That'll be game up.
Yeah.
But anyway, hey, something else I wanted to say, which is incredible, absolutely incredible, is that a couple of weeks ago, on August the 6th, a lady called Carrie Ann Cox actually activated the song lines here. She reactivated the song line at the start of the song line in Australia. And it starts here, apparently. The indigenous people say it starts here and it goes off around the planet from this point. This is why so many people have said that the shift in consciousness that's supposed to happen is supposed to start on the east coast of Australia. Well, what happened on August 6th was that Carrie Anne sang to the song line and she reactivated it and she changed the song line. And now, she's had reports from elders all over the country and from people as far away as Norway who've been saying the ley lines are shifting. All the energy grid on the planet is shifting. Now, when you look at the elite and you look at what they've done with their monuments and their obelisks, all of these things are like acupuncture needles and they channel the energy, much like putting acupuncture needles into your body. But now the ley lines are shifting. So all their acupuncture needles are on the wrong points. Because the ley lines are shifting. And this is what's changing. Have you felt the change in energy in the last couple of weeks?
Well, you know, honestly, I'm just so deeply involved in, you know, doing all these broadcasts and making films and stuff and writing about the Hopi at the moment. What I've basically focused myself on is trying to get all of these factions and all these groups, millions and millions of people in Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, Amnesty International, Greenpeace, getting all these people together and coming up through these broadcasts with a nuts and bolts simple plan that challenges the fake governments all around the world. And I think the indigenous people, the reason I did this broadcast tonight is so that it just lays out the groundwork for people who can listen to the MP3. They can get a handle on the whole thing. And then, you know, I've got loads of broadcasts all planned out where we expose, you know, stuff in the first hour. And then the second hour, we're actually coming up with solutions. Because I really don't like fear-based broadcasting. I hate it.
Well, yeah, it's got to be solution-based. And the solution is to merge back with the old ways and to understand these indigenous cultures. And if you think you're enslaved to this system, well, I can show you that you're not through trust law. Basic understanding of trust law, and you can free yourself from this entire system and realize that you're actually a free person. I've been telling people that they're free for the last 3 years. Look, folks, you're free. Just step into your power, you know, and this power is equity. You know, you hold all the equity in the program that is yourself, the manifestation that is yourself. In you hold all the cards. Why are you letting someone else control you? It's only because of these laws and stuff. But if you really look at these laws, it's all corporate law, and it all relates back to the Crown Corporation, which doesn't even have anything to do with the Queen. It's all back to the Vatican, and I mean, there's two different Your Majesties, there's two different crowns. There's the Crown as in Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth of the House of Windsor, and there's the Crown as in the Crown Corporation, Her Majesty in Right of England. This is a private corporation. So, I mean, people have just got to see how this works. And that private corporation goes back to the Vatican. It goes back to the Romulus Pontifex Trust. And it all goes back to there. So, people just have to wake up to this. And once they can see, even through documents that they have themselves, their own birth certificate, I can show you your birth certificate, which many people in the free man movement will say is your certificate of slavery. I can show you it's actually your certificate of freedom. Because it's actually a trust agreement that's signed off on by the government, and you're the sole shareholder in that agreement, and which means you can appoint yourself as the administrator in that trust, and that puts the government back in the position of trustee that they're supposed to be. And you can do this all through the common law courts by simply sending them some letters and setting a default judgment, and bang, you're free. It's really simple, and that's what these workshops I'm doing are all about.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. Now, I've got this Vatican show planned for next Sunday, but in 2 weeks from today, Max, I don't know how you fixed with your diary.
What date is that?
It's a Sunday here.
It's a
Monday morning for here.
That should be all right. It's Sunday the 4th for me, about the same time.
Yeah, it's going to be exactly the same time. I think I'm going to ask Chris to actually send you the world clock times and the dates so that you got it right. So it's going to be exactly 2 weeks from when it started today.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's 10 o'clock in the next Sunday or Sunday morning for me. That's a great time for me. Or 11 o'clock, unless you want me to come on for the whole 2 hours.
Well, what I'll do, I think I'm going to stick to this format just for the first few shows where I pre-record things for the first hour. And I'm using bits of music and stuff because a lot of this talk radio stuff is a bit dry. And so I'm trying to G up a whole new audience of people that, you know, would listen to stuff that's got, you know, bits of music in it, rather than just listening to the normal Patriot radio network.
Not a problem.
So, yeah, that's what I'd like to do. I'd like to do exactly the same thing again, Max. And, you know, this whole thing where they got the kids dressed up in their, you know, Christian Sunday best and everything, went along those song lines. I look upon that kind of thing as spiritual vandalism.
Oh, it is.
Evil vandalism.
But it also, it goes so far to show you that they know yeah. about all this stuff. Otherwise, yes, why would they get these kids to walk the song lines?
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, they know exactly what they're doing, and everybody's distracted by looking down all these different rabbit holes, wondering who's to blame, and is it this big fight between God and the devil, and are aliens going to come and save me, when all they have to do is step back and look at the bigger picture and connect with the people around them. It's that simple.
Oh, yeah. Now, I'm planning to come to Australia, Max, and do some presentations with an old friend of mine who's a former British military intelligence officer.
Okay.
I know that sounds crazy. He's a Freemason as well.
Okay, interesting.
He's one of these people that thought that he was fighting on the good side. And, you know, he was even stationed at the Vatican. And he's English and he's moved to Australia. He's been living in Australia for quite a long time now.
Okay, when are you planning on coming here?
Well, this is it. March next year, I'm going to Egypt. So it's going to be sometime between Christmas and March. It'll probably be, I would say, the first, second, or third week of February next year.
Okay.
So would it be possible, Max, that we could sort of organize things? I tried to join your Facebook page, but you're packed out with friends.
Yeah, and yeah, I've got like 400 yeah. people on the waiting list. So if you keep sending the requests, occasionally the counter glitches out and it'll get through eventually. And then the next time it glitches out, I can add you. Because sometimes you go there and it reads 4,999, and I can add one more person. Then it jumps back to 5,020 or something, you know. So God knows how much. Just won't count above 5,000, so.
Well, you can imagine how much Facebook love me, can't you?
Oh, yeah, me too. And YouTube, mate. YouTube, I've caught them. I've seen drop 3,000 views off one clip in 1 hour on my YouTube channel. People get unsubscribed from it all the time, and then they have to resubscribe sometimes every day. And then I get messages from them saying, Max, I'm not even able to subscribe anymore.
No, that's right.
It's one of the most repressed channels on YouTube. I've got like 30,000 subscribers, but they keep deleting them and they keep knocking the clips back. And I can look and find, I can post a clip on YouTube and then Google the clip and find it on 20,000 websites. It is embedded on 20,000 websites. And I look at Google, I look at YouTube, and it's got 2,000 views, you know?
So, yeah, yeah. What have you found? Are they selling advertising over the top of your clips, or have you stopped them from doing that?
Well, they've tried to, but they offered me partnership, and I knocked it back. And then they gave me the ability to upload full-length movies. And that only lasted a week, and they knocked that back. And, so I've never accepted any of their advertising. I've never accepted their partnership. I think a lot of that is actually entrapment. I think
it is.
A lot of people don't use original footage on their Google and YouTube clips. And if you're making money out of that, then down the line they can accuse you of piracy and they can jail you under their laws. Yeah. And that's why I think they want people to become partners, you know.
Yeah, it's not that they would do it, but somebody like me, I mean, I've just discovered that there was this Italian racket going on with the Italian YouTube, and they professionally subtitled all my films into Italian.
Okay.
You know, really professionally. I mean, that takes a lot of doing.
Yeah.
And my films aren't the easiest films in the world to subtitle, I can tell you that now. So they spent a lot of money. I've made 14 films, every single one of them subtitled in Italian. with extra bits added on with Italian captions, all beautifully re-rendered and, you know, beautifully done, all backloaded onto the Italian YouTube. So I found that and I thought, well, that's strange. Why on earth would somebody spend a lot of money doing that and then load it onto YouTube for nothing? You'd think they'd put it on the Italian Amazon and try and flog, you know, pirate versions of it. So anyway, I'm watching my own films in Italian.
Yeah, interesting.
And up crops the video, actual video TV commercials for the History Channel, Carnival Cruises, a gas station company, Sony PlayStation, all as if you're watching a TV channel, except it's all in Italian.
Bizarre.
And they, yeah, so I sent them a letter, and I've sent everybody a letter. I've sent Siemens Mobile Phones a letter, and I'm asking them how much you paid YouTube for those adverts. It's running, I would imagine they were getting somewhere in the region of about $100,000 for each of my films in terms of the number of adverts being run.
Yeah.
In Italian. So, you know, it's all corrupt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The whole system is, it's bizarre. But,
yeah. So they don't like me now.
Well, you get that. I've had a lot of people subtitle my films, but they've just uploaded them to YouTube. They've all done it with my permission. My films are out in Serbian and Italian and Greek and French and God knows. It's quite amazing. And people have just done that because they figured it's good information. But YouTube just suppresses it. YouTube just changes my view counts. They limit everything I can do. It's shocking.
Yeah.
YouTube just sent me a letter, and they said, I'm sorry, but all your view counts have been frozen, and we're trying to fix the situation.
Yeah. Well, they changed them. I've seen them drop 3,000 views in 1 hour. I've checked the clip, and it just drops 1,000 views every 15 minutes. You think, okay.
Yeah. You know? That's right. That's right. The reason they're doing that is because the views, that statistic, can be used by any copyright owner in front of a judge to say, hey, judge, look, this has got so many views, and I've lost the retail value of my documentary or my movie or whatever it is. And so that has been happening. I mean, Google are settling out of court all the time, and I think that's really why they're freezing these views now. But, you know, I mean, I'm up into the hundreds of millions of views. And across Google, Video, Vimeo, Vodpod, all these others, there's literally tens of thousands of clips of my films. And it hasn't helped, I don't think. It's helped in terms of people discovering me and discovering the films. But in terms of actually people purchasing a DVD to keep me so I can get my production expenses back, forget it.
Oh, yeah, no, doesn't help that at all, no.
No, not at all, because they watch it on YouTube. And also, the other thing I have to say about this is there's a lot of mashups where they get hold of your film and they mash it up and they re-edit the whole thing and put other bits in, and they do it badly, and it puts a bad kind of karma on you as your reputation as a filmmaker.
Yeah, yeah, people do that all the time.
Yeah.
That's the joy of the internet, mate.
So it's a huge dinosaur which I'm trying to control at the moment with a few letters to explain to people, you know, that it's a dishonest business model.
Oh, mate, I put I've got a free ebook on my website that I wrote about history, just to show people that history is completely wrong. Everything they told you is a complete load of bollocks. And so I put it up there for free on my website. You know, I didn't think anyone would even read it, and it ended up becoming enormously popular. And then I found Amazon selling it for $11.95.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I contacted them and said, hey, you're selling my free book, you know. You're not allowed to sell it. It's free. You can have it on there free, but don't sell it, you know. And they're going, well, if you want us to stop selling it, if you think it's being sold without your permission, please send us a copy of the copyright. And I'm like, there is no copyright. It's a free book. I didn't copyright it. It's free. You understand what the word means, you know. And they kept sending back saying, send us a letter of the copyright. Three or four letters I wrote to them. and said, please send me, and I kept saying, please send me a copy of the copyright. And I wrote back and I said, okay. I said, last chance. Take the book down, you know, and they sent it back again. Please send a letter of the copyright. And then I said, okay, that's it. I'll mention your theft of my work on tomorrow's radio show. Enjoy the show. I'll send you a copy and enjoy the hate mail. And I did a show the next day where I spoke about it, and apparently they got like 3,000 emails from people saying, why are you selling Max's book? And about 15 people closed their Amazon accounts and all this sort of stuff. And I got a letter from them the next day saying, we've taken your book down from, please forgive us, It was hilarious. It was really good.
Was that Amazon.com or is there an Australian Amazon?
No, it was Amazon.com.
Yeah, well, again, the person that actually uploaded that claimed the copyright. Otherwise, they wouldn't have allowed it to have been put onto the system.
Yeah, probably. But
you can force them to give you the identity of the person that made what you call false attribution of copyright.
Yeah.
You're Australian, and you are protected under the Berne International Convention on Copyright, because Australia is a signatory to that. And as soon as you mention that to them, it scares the willies out of them. Yeah,
but it was good though. But it was good though. I mean, I managed to get him to take it down just by being an angry voice and not even playing by their rules, and I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah, I do. I do these kinds of things for the glory of it.
Now, you should have seen this Aboriginal guy that we took up with us to the federal panel that wanted to make changes to the constitution. Mm-hmm. This guy, Mark McMurtry, he's quite white, but he's part Aboriginal, and he's very proud of his heritage, and he's got an amazing mind as far as legal things go. It's almost autistic. He's got this photographic memory for numbers. And the worst thing the Brits ever did was number all of their laws and number all of the paragraphs and all of the clauses and all of the act.
Yeah.
So he just pulls the number out of thin air and he remembers the act. So we went up to this meeting and there's this Crown prosecutor or Crown lawyer there who is the former head of the Australian Lawyers Association, quite a large man, quite an overbearing looking man. He's sitting there in his Armani suit at the head of the table, looking very, very authoritative. And there's Mark sitting at the table in his grubby blue t-shirt, hasn't had shave for about 3 days, got a tooth missing, you know, and he's just kind of sitting there. And this lawyer's rattled off all this stuff, and then Mark's just gone, okay, well, from my perspective. And he started talking, and the lawyer's demeanor in about a matter of 5 or 10 minutes, the guy was sitting there with his looking round shoulder with his jaw open. It's just absolutely mind blown. Mark's fantastic. He'd say things like, you might say that, but if I can refer you to a case of such and such versus such and such from 1875, and if you scroll in that case to section 15A, page 373, go down to paragraph 5A and 5C, it says this. And the guy's just looking at it going, how the fuck do you know all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, but that's the way it is, because lawyers don't know the law.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, if you try and get a lawyer nowadays to do, I don't know, some kind of medical case or like a copyright case, they don't know it.
Well, they don't. And it's, the point is, there's no point getting a lawyer anyway, because they all have they've all got a superseding oath to the Bar Association. They don't care about you. Yeah. They only care about the Bar Association and serving the Crown Corporation. That's what they do.
Yeah.
What we've discovered, though, is that what's happening in the courts is they're actually practicing trust law, but we don't know it. They're not telling you that's what they're doing. And because we're not clarifying what position we are actually there in, as soon as we arrive at the court, as soon as the proceedings start, then they've locked you into their statute legal system because you never claimed your authority in trust law. That's what's happening.
Wow.
Mm.
Well, I hope that, there's justice for the Aboriginal people.
Well, there will be. Actually, the Noongar people have appointed me their administrator and director for their lands over there, now that they've adopted me into their tribe. And I'm going over to the Kimberley Coast sometime in September to speak to the Governor-General on their behalf. And I'm going to be looking at things from a perspective of trust law. And Mark McMurtry is coming with me, the legal spokesman that was up at the meeting with us. And he's going to be talking to them from the aspect of actual law, you know, statute law. And we're going to run rings around these people, and they have absolutely no claim to this land, and we're going to really go and make a stand for the Aboriginal people. I'm not sure when it will happen. The David Icke tour is in September, and I'm emceeing the Gold Coast event, so I've got to be back on the 24th for that.
Well, Kimberley is Western Australia, and that's where you've got the Joseph Bradshaw Foundation that have been doing the conservation work for all the rock art.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got the Wangina rock art, and now this is really important stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
Is it a World Heritage Site already?
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these sites are. The site that they're doing the big gas hub at is a World Heritage Site up on the Kimberley coast at James Price Point. It's one of the most sacred Aboriginal sites in Australia, and they're putting the biggest gas hub in the world there, and that's why I'm going over this.
That's a scam. It's a sham, and it's a scam. They're deliberately breaking up the etheric energy of that area there, definitely.
Well, they are. I'm going to tell you an amazing thing as well. When Kerry Ann was here, because she comes from that land, when she was here and she activated the songline, 2 days later, over on the Kimberley coast at James Price Point, where they're building the gas hub, the government said, oh, there's no danger to the environment by us doing it here. There's no endangered species. The whales don't use this part of the coast, all this sort of rubbish. Well, 2 days after Kerry-Ann activated the songline, suddenly there's a pod of 14 whales splashing around off the coast, and this little creature called the bilby came out. And there's all these bilbies jumping around with their babies all around the gas hub. And this is one of Australia's most threatened species. So they've had to stop all work on the gas hub pending a full investigation into the whales and the bilbies. And that was 2 days after she activated the songline. And that's the other side of the songline. That's the other end of it. So that's
okay. Well, that is the good side of these video sharing websites, because if you get footage of that and it goes viral, you got them.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's the way to do it. I mean, you know, if ever I want to do a campaign like that, that's when I'll use these video sharing websites.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah, blimey. Well, I'd love to go to Kimberley with you.
Well, there's a thing called 10,000 Amend, and they want to get 10,000 people on the ground there on the 10th of October this year. We're hoping that's going to happen. But my meeting over there with the Governor General and speaking for the Noongar people will be sometime in September, I believe. I think Kerry Ann is going back over there on the 18th of September. I think I've got the show on with David Icke on the 24th. So I don't know whether I'll actually go over back with her then, or maybe after the David Icke talk. It depends on when the Governor General's going to be there. But even if I only go over there for a few days, it'll still be worth it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm filming in Egypt, so I won't be able to go that time, but maybe after Christmas.
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. The people there will absolutely welcome us there. We could also go to Uluru or something like that. There's the elders there would absolutely welcome us as well. Uluru is an incredibly powerful place. Uluru Kata Juta. Yeah. The Kata Juta is actually the same rock as Uluru. It's like a huge horseshoe-shaped rock that goes underground and pops up as a little mountain range nearby. It's quite amazing.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fantastic. Yeah, I mean, to get all this stuff on the film with these new style cameras, which I'm using now, where I'm filming time lapse.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really what I'm into now. All my films have got great big time lapse sequences in them.
Okay, cool. You get a time lapse on Uluru as you watch it change color through the day. It's absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah.
The colors.
Yeah,
are
yeah.
Gorgeous. But some of the stories and the ceremonies of the original people, like that one I was talking about with the bees, absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing that they can sing this stuff in, you know. But it all works on the triad. So even with the Christian religion, you've got the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. It always works on the triad. You know, with the original people, you've got Father, Son, Mother, Earth, and tribe. And when you look at trust law, you've got the grantor, the beneficiary, and the trustee. It's all the same thing. It's all based on the same thing. And how's this? You know, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, that the church co-opted it and created the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. If you look at the Father, you've got, okay, God. If you look at the Son, you've got man, and then you've got Holy Ghost. They even call it a ghost, you know, the system itself, the meme that enslaves us that we think is real, which is simply an idea, the Holy Ghost. You know what I'm saying? It's,
I do, yeah.
It's quite amazing when you really start looking into this and you just go, you devious bastards. This is so devious and it's so evil. It's so polarized. I don't like to use the word evil, but it's so polarized and it's so incredibly clever as well. It's really clever, but they absolutely know what's going on. And this is all based on the ancient energy, the ancient rituals, the ancient knowledge that built Egypt, that did all of these incredible things. And Egypt was built by black people. You know, all the cultures, all the paintings you see there, they're all dark skin with big lips. What does that tell you? What lives in, where's Egypt? It's in Africa. Who's in Africa? Black people, you know, they don't want anyone to know that a lot of these cultures were built. All of these things were built by indigenous cultures with dark skin. You know, white people have a real problem with that. So,
One of the definitions of a sovereign nation by the Supreme Court in the USA when they're talking about the Navajo or, you know, the Cherokee Nation is that the Supreme Court said that a sovereign nation cannot be taxed by another nation.
Mm.
And therefore, if you move your business, even if it's just a name plaque on a door, and you register it at an address with a welcome letter from one of the tribal elders, you don't have to pay tax anymore.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. You could also set yourself up as a private foundation. There's ways of doing that. You set yourself up as a tax-free, not-for-profit foundation.
What about an Aboriginal bank that runs on the internet, where it's the Aborigine bank?
Well, that would be good. That would be great.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you had an account that was registered as an Aboriginal bank and its address, I mean, you know, we're living in the age of the internet.
Yeah.
Who bothers going down the bank anymore? You do it all online. People surely would be depositing like $10 to support it.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. That's actually a good thing that I should talk to the elders about, actually.
Yeah, it is, because that's exactly what I'm going to do with the Navajo and the Hopi. What I'm going to do is I'm going to, you know, basically go to Arizona. I'm making this film, World of Wonder, and I'm going to be filming the Hopi ancient monuments there, because they've got their own megalithic structures which a lot of people don't even know about. And my idea is to really get these people up to speed on the internet and to tell them, listen, you need the Navajo Bank, the Hopi Bank, and you need to get it online. You need to have it registered with your sovereign territory, and then everybody in the world will have accounts with you to support you. And in terms of businesses, Miami is an Indian nation, believe it or not. Miami in Florida, where you've got Disney, SeaWorld, NASA, they could all be saving millions in local taxes.
Yeah, well, that'd be the way to do it.
Just by nominating, if they send a letter to the IRS saying, we nominate now to pay our local taxes to the Miami Indians, there's nothing they can do about it, because the Supreme Court didn't want to be seen as racists, so they have made the Miami Indians a sovereign nation. And we're just one step away. We're literally one step away because of the internet, of this being run like Switzerland, if you like. If you go to Switzerland, you walk up a street in Switzerland, every door has got about 150 brass plaques around it with the names of different foundations and companies. The company is not there. It's not even there. But it's registered there, and they've nominated their tax at 3% in Switzerland, and the company's on the other side of the planet. And this is what the Navajo, the Aborigines, the Maori, all these people could be doing this.
Well, yeah, everything would work. I mean, anything we can do to mess up this Vatican system is fine by me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah. That's really why I'm doing these broadcasts, is to actually get this kind of thing underway and put these ideas out on the airwaves.
Mm.
Travel around, do some talks, and make documentaries that are really showing people the solution.
Okay. Well, whereabouts do you think you're going to be doing a talk when you come out here?
I'm definitely going to be doing Brisbane, Melbourne, and Sydney. That's for sure.
Okay. Well, Brisbane's reasonably handy for me.
Okay. All right. That's where I've got a lot of friends, a lot of viewers of the Enigma Channel live in Brisbane.
Okay, well, I'm in Byron Bay, which is about 2 hours' drive from there.
Yeah, I've got viewers and I've got friends in Byron Bay, so that's probably where I'm going to start.
Oh, excellent.
And then definitely going to the centre to see Ayers Rock, and then travelling over to Kimberley to do some time-lapse photography and meet those people. And
I can definitely put you in touch with the tribal owners of the land over at the Kimberley.
Well, that'd be great. Let's see if we can kick off an Aborigine situation, because, you know, the royals, I mean, they're so sneaky. They must be the sneakiest people on the planet.
Well, that's how they've got away with this. I mean, they're major shareholders of the Crown Corporation, and the Crown Corporation does it, and their hands are clean because it's the corporation. That's the nature of corporations. Corporations are there so that sociopathic people can carry out their biological urges upon the rest of the planet and not be responsible for it, basically. I mean, that's all a corporation is.
Yeah, that exactly. I mean, you know, Bank of England Nominees Limited handled their investment portfolio.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm up to speed on the USA nations, the sovereign nations within the USA. There's 151 of them.
Mm.
I mean, the Sioux Nation have 2.6 million square acres. The Apaches have monopolized telecommunications. There's even an Apache telephone company. So they are getting there. They are getting there, but they've been sidetracked into ridiculous businesses like gambling. It's ridiculous.
What's happening in Australia is a lot of people have tried this. I mean, some Aboriginals have tried it. A lot of them simply can't get their head around it because it's so alien to them. But some have tried it. But what has ended up happening is they've ended up tied up in contract law. They're not dealing with it from a perspective of trust. You've got to operate in trust law because you have absolutely no rights in contract law and statute law. It's all got to be equity. It's all got to be trust law. And that's the only place you actually have rights, because equity is king. And most of what people are doing when they're signing up for these sorts of things is they're signing agreements with government, which is putting them in statute law, which is designed to basically take everything from them.